That makes a gross noise when you step on it. Unsquish the Fish with your host, Ron Caniff.
Hello, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode of Unsquish the Fish. Today, I'm excited to have a writer for FinManiacs.com, Matthew Knowles. How's it going, Matthew?
It's going well. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I'm good. What's going on in your world? You getting excited about the season, even though we're like 90-something days away?
Yeah, with the news, it's been really getting excited, a lot of excitement going on.
Yeah, it almost seems like, even though it's the off season between the OTAs and a signing here, a signing there, Parker surgery, what have you, it just seems like every day, every other day, there's something new to talk about. I don't know if I've ever noticed quite a packed off season, at least for the Dolphins.
Yeah, I haven't even hit Twitter this today, and I'm sure that the Evan Mathis cut. Finn fans must be going crazy right now.
Everybody's wanting him, man. Everybody's just desperate to upgrade this guard position, and we've been linked to the trading for this guy for two seasons now, or last off season, last season, this off season. So the fact that he would just get dropped like that. And he's a two-time, three-time Pro Bowler, and he's been ranked the top guard the last two out of 3 years, and number two one of those years. I think Finn fans have a reason to be excited, but I don't know if we can get him. I guess we'll see.
Right, of course.
All right, man. Maybe let's pick it up with Mathis. Why don't we start with that? Oh, I have a question for you, and maybe you could answer it better than me. Why are we in such a situation all the time where we're just so desperate to fix guard? Why can't we seem to fix the guard position,
in your opinion? In my opinion, I think that we were this power offense with Sperano, and we had these big, mauler guys, and now we switched over to this zone blocking scheme. So that's a totally different skill set. We try to do it with Thomas, and I think we stunted his growth, moving him around and putting him at right tackle, putting him at left guard, putting him at right guard, not really having him being able to hone the position. And you can't really evaluate a player like that if you cannot stick him at one position. I think we're getting closer and closer each year. You know, the Albert signing was huge last year, and Juwan James became a above average or average right tackle. So we're getting there, I think. I think it's getting there. I really like last year we got Billy Turner. I've heard nothing but rave reviews. He's the last man leaving on the offensive side. He's one of the hardest working members of the Dolphins offense and team. And I loved him. I loved his film last year. I thought he had this beautiful feet for that zone blocking scheme, and he also showed aggression. I know it was that division, you know, that division one or that division two lesser talent, you know, whatever you want to say. But the school he went to won four championships, I believe, and whoever, you know, whatever level you're playing tic-tac-toe, you're playing checkers, you win championships, you know, you have that, you know what it takes, you know what it takes to win. And I love Billy Turner last year. I love that pick. And Jamil Douglas seems to be a good fit. You know, I think he really has a good feet. He has to work a lot. I mean, there's a reason why he was a fifth round pick, but he has really good feet. He has good athleticism, and I think it was a great pickup. So I think we're getting there.
Okay. So how do you feel about Mathis? Do you want to sign him? You think we should?
I think it'll be a good indicator. I don't know if it's too soon to really evaluate who we have now, but I think it will be a good indicator of where we're at to see how we are how much we push for him, how much we try to get him. I think that would really show us, all right, well, we're okay at the guard position. We're not there yet. This is, or it's a code red. We need to hit the, we need to break the glass and break the bank up for Mathis. You know, I don't think he'll cost that much, but you know, there's a reason why he's leaving Philadelphia. And I think it was a contract dispute.
I believe it was that he wanted more money.
Right.
So I'm imagining, and he's 33 years old. So this is his last chance to get that contract. I don't see him coming to a team for a 1-year deal. I think it's going to be, as much as I want him, I think it's going to be tough to get him because I don't see him coming to the team for a 1-year. Yeah. For just 1-year deal. He's going to want a multi-year deal and he's going to want millions of dollars. That's the truth. Now, can the Dolphins pull it off? Well, they may be able to, but at what cost will be the question. And not necessarily this year's cost, but next year when they go to sign OV or a few of these other guys are looking to sign, specifically OV in my mind, I don't want it to cost us him for sure. I don't know if it's worth it in that case. So what are your thoughts on that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have to evaluate everything again. You have to pay close attention to how much we're talking to him to see really how worried the Dolphins are going to, how worried the coaching staff is about the offensive line. The money you can always find here and there, and Obi's a great player, but he is replaceable, in my opinion. He's replaceable, just like I think even I love Lamar Miller, but if that position, the running back position, is a replaceable position. So it depends on what you really want to get out of your line. And like you said, he is 33 years old though. So that is something to consider.
It's just, I think it's more, I'm less worried about him being 33 for us signing him than as much as it's his last chance to get some bigger money, and that he's going to cost too much for us. That's my concern. Yeah, honestly, if he was 29, he may be willing to do a 1-year deal somewhere, prove his value, and then go out and sign a big contract. But I don't think that's likely this time. But anyway, my biggest concern is what you said, though. If the Dolphins hit red alert, they push hard for this guy. It shows us, okay, they're not happy at guard. They're concerned. They want to fix it. And then we don't get him. That is what will make me nervous. If they don't get him, but they didn't really try that hard, at least not visibly to us, I won't be as nervous.
And I know you had him last week, Oscar Hazel. I'm a big follower of him, and he said it best. He said, "If your left guard position is your biggest worry, then that's a pretty good concern, because one player on your O line really doesn't make that big of a difference." Especially that left guard position, because it's true what he says. The center does, usually on pass protection, does shade over to the left guard and will help him out 75% of the time on pass plays. So not the biggest position concern on the offensive line.
Okay. All right. I could see that. Well, let's maybe segue a little bit to C.J. Mosley, who we just signed from Detroit. What are your thoughts on him, or thoughts on that signing in general?
I think it is a indicator of how much I really do think this shows Sue's influence and Sue's what he might say, him whispering in the ears of the coach and the GM, because he knows the guy. You know, this guy, he got busted for breaking team rules during the London game. I think that was something to do with that. So, you know, Philbin has a reputation of not really liking those character concerns or whatever the case may be. And I might have gotten this completely wrong, but I believe it might have been a drug issue, something like that. I could be completely wrong, but so if Sue's like, this guy is good, this guy, you know, I like this guy, that does say a lot to me.
What does the signing itself say? Just going out and signing a guy that's maybe even considered starter caliber. with the guys that we already had. What do you think that tells us about how they feel about Earl Mitchell, Jordan Phillips, AJ Francis, Anthony Johnson?
I think defensive tackle is a place you need more bodies. We like the rotation. It's not really a question of, oh, we don't like this guy, or we don't think Phillips is going to work out, or Earl Mitchell is not our guy for the next year or so. Because, you know, Jordan Phillips, how many snaps have you seen in OTAs? Not that many.
With the Earl first Mitchell, team, very little, if any. I don't know.
First team reps has gotten. And I hear Earl Mitchell is doing a lot of work, and I've heard some reporters say, some Twitter reporters say that he's been doing really well. So, you know, I don't think it's we really have a concern about this. I think it's a pretty, I don't know the numbers. I think I read it today. It was like a pretty small contract. It wasn't a bank buster. So, you know, I like the depth. I like what it tells me about, you know, this might just be a camp guy, or this is a guy that Sue has experience with, and maybe he does say something to Philbin or Tannenbaum or whoever, saying, "Hey, you can trust this guy. I vouch for this guy," or maybe it's just a body, you know?
Yeah, I guess you could look at it, in my opinion, one of three ways. It could be what you said. It just gives us some more depth. It was an opportunity to improve the roster to make the 53 stronger. Simple as that. It could be that simple. It could be a case that we really like Mitchell and Sue together, but we're not sure, as we rotate guys in or out, or if somebody gets an injury, we're not sure what else we're comfortable with. So let's get this guy in because he could be that guy. Or it could be a matter of the fact that the three guys that really rotated last year were Starks, Audric, and Mitchell. And that last six games, we got shredded up the middle, and we are trying to eliminate as much of that as possible because it just didn't work for us. And Earl Mitchell is the last piece of that. So let's see if Mosley can come on and be that guy with Sue instead of Mitchell. It could be any of those three things, honestly. And as the season plays out, maybe even as the preseason and the starting lineup is said, maybe we'll know more what they were thinking. Right now, I don't think we really know what they're thinking.
Team needs defensive tackle depth, and look what happened last year. Like you said, Starks' game went down. Audric was fine, but you still need rotation. People get tired. Even Sue, this Superman, he's going to get tired, and he's going to need some rotation. And maybe it does tell you. I really haven't seen too much CJ Mosley, so I'm not going to lie and say, oh, he's a three tech or a five tech. He's a run defender or a penetrator. But maybe he's a passing down guy, or maybe he likes to stop the run. You know, I think it's a depth issue, and not really anything more than we don't like certain guys already on our team.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I guess we're going to see how that plays out. What are your thoughts on the Parker injury, or even him just missing the 8 weeks or so he's going to miss in? How are you feeling about that as a fan?
I actually like it a lot. I like the forward thinking of the Dolphins. I think this was something that they got this was one of the many things this offseason that they got right. You know, he's a rookie, so he's probably not going to catch fire. Historically speaking, rookies don't really catch fire except for these past couple years.
Yeah, I was about to say these past couple years have like blown that out the window, but before, you are exactly correct. It was rare they would.
Right. So let's make sure that this foot injury is not a long-term concern. You know, you think of some guys that have some foot injury history, and that's Hakeem Nicks. He had a foot injury. Then his career just went down the tubes. Santonio Holmes, foot injury, went down the tubes. So let's try to get this right. You know, you invested a first-round pick, not just for 2015 season, but for the next five years at least. And let's get it right. Let's put his foot in. Look what happened to Odell Beckham last year. He missed a couple games.
He missed, like, I think the first half of the season, if I'm not mistaken. And somewhere in there.
Somewhere around 1,200 yards.
Oh, he crushed it when he came back. And I'm not even sure how many games he missed, but I know he crushed it when he came back. I think he had a pretty severe hamstring injury, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I would rather have, well, I'm not going to say that. I'd rather, they're both really, really bad at nagging injuries, but if they can get this toe right, I'd rather have this injury concern than the hamstring, which can linger throughout the player's career. Plus, they said that he could have played. He could have played if they they needed to play next week. He could have played.
If they had elected not to do the surgery, you mean, he could have just gone ahead and played.
Exactly. It was just a nagging injury and not really a, you know, it wasn't a, he really injured it. This was from beginning of last year in college. So he was pretty productive when he came back from that. And like, I believe it was on the Finnsiders, Sam Madison said he had the same sort of injury and he came back 10 days later. So I'm not too concerned. We have a lot of doubt. That's one of our deepest positions on our team. So it's not really that concerning to me. I hate having rookies not go through OTAs and mini camps and all that, but I'd rather have him play the last part of the season than rush him back and then really injure him.
Okay, so one of my thoughts, though, was what I was excited about Parker is that even if he wasn't a bona fide starter every down he's out there, I was really looking forward to what he brought us in the red zone because that was such a problem for us last year. We were first in the NFL at getting to the red zone, but we were definitely not first at scoring.
No.
Obviously, or we'd have been in the playoffs, maybe even further. So if you take Parker out of the equation, and then we have Stills, Landry, I'm gonna throw in Jordan Cameron in there as well, and Greg Jennings. How much more have we really improved that red zone, touchdown catching ability? If you take Parker out of the equation, that's what I'm a little nervous about because even though he was a rookie, I was excited for at least him providing a guy they really probably had to really watch because if you put a short corner on him, even though he's a rookie, he's probably going to be able to tower over that guy and maybe catch a touchdown. So what are your thoughts on that scenario?
Yeah, I definitely agree. He definitely is a red zone threat. I think Jennings could be a good red zone target. His quickness and his precise cuts are hard, you know, are very hard to cover, even in short areas. James Jordan Cameron is a giant, and he'll be a really good red zone target. I'm extremely excited about Jordan Cameron being with the Dolphins. I think if he stays healthy, he could be Tannehill's favorite target.
That would be great too, because that's just not a talked about threat, or that has been not talked about signing as much, even a lot by Dolphins fans and Dolphins media, but especially by the national media. That signing went so under the radar,
I
know a lot of it is because it's the injury deal and the concussion situation. But if he's able to overcome that and it's not a problem, I think we really got a steal on that guy.
Absolutely, I love that pick. I thought that pick was that. Signing was just genius for what Tannehill is limited to. Like he's a bit of an overthrower. Well, let's get a 6'4" deep red zone threat. Cameron has a big body. He can box him out. He has nice soft hands, and he's a seam ripper. And Tannehill's best throws are in the seam. So I think that if he stays healthy, I think that was a home run.
I agree. And I know we talked about some of Tannehill's, you mentioned Tannehill's limitations, and some information I've been hearing and listening to from some different sources, I've kind of accumulated something that I realized that the Mike Wallace-Tannehill lack of connection was much more on Wallace than it was on Tannehill, and here's some of the and here's some of the reasons why. Is number one, they say, and many people said this, Mike Wallace is an inconsistent route runner, and I'm even talking a nine route. Well, how can you run a nine route inconsistently? Well, this is how. He would not run it at the same speed. He was either flying as fast as he can, or not flying as fast as, or half speeding it, or he would change his speeds in the middle of the route. That really caused a lot of problems. And the proof to this was he had his biggest years when Ben Roethlisberger was running an offense where he was just running out of the pocket and playing street ball, and Mike Wallace would just run as fast as he could. They would connect. When Todd Haley forced Roethlisberger to go in the pocket, and it forced Mike Wallace just to run normal routes, not playing street ball, that the Tannehill to Wallace connection and the Ben Roethlisberger to Wallace connection, the numbers and percentage were virtually the same. So
yeah.
I think that that says a lot, honestly.
I don't know if you said that in a previous podcast, but I heard that verbatim before, and it totally makes sense. It totally makes – because I remember watching Mike Wallace last year and just saying he's – and I wouldn't say he's given up on the route, but sometimes he just, you know, wouldn't run it down, or he wouldn't, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse in the ground or someone that's not even on the team anymore, but he wouldn't run it down, and he wouldn't
fight for really, the ball. He wouldn't fight for the ball.
He wouldn't fight for the ball.
He wouldn't go up and get it. He wouldn't try and come back for it. He wouldn't go out for it. If it didn't hit him in a little frisbee sized spot in his hands, he wasn't catching it, period, in a story.
Exactly. Exactly. And I just think that he wasn't the right guy for Tannehill. And I'm not saying Tannehill was perfect, and I'm not saying Tannehill, you know, threw the best deep ball, which he didn't.
He doesn't. I'm not sitting here saying he's like right. He's like Russell Wilson or something.
Right.
You know, or Aaron Rodgers. No, he is not that. But I think maybe his lack of deep ball connection is a little overblown, because Brian Hartline wasn't a speedy guy, but he sure seemed to be able to connect at some decent distances with him on many occasions, especially even like going out of the sideline, which was a pass last year they totally took out of the offense. But the first 2 years, they would have Brian Hartline just shoot down the sideline and kind of angle out. And, I mean, there was a window as small as you could imagine to throw the ball to. And I know every Dolphins fan remembers at least one of these throws, if not more than one. And Tannehill would rope it in there every single time, 30, 35, 40 yards out. Every single time, he would never miss it. So I think if it has the right routes and the right receiver, that Tannehill's going to surprise some people this year with some of the deeper throws.
I agree with you completely. And I just I see Tannehill, and he's making these 20-yard throws, and they're bullet passes and just on the money in tight windows. It doesn't really seem to connect with his lack of deep ball. It's not an I really don't think it's an arm concern. I think it's I hope it's a mechanic concern, because then he can work on it. I think he needs to transfer his weight. He needs to really step up, maybe his footwork. But whatever the case may be, like you said, those comeback routes that he did with Hartline, they were on the money, and they were bullets exactly where they needed to be. And I remember passes to Damian Williams where he hit Damian Williams in stride, hit his hands, and he just dropped the ball. And a couple more passes like Deion Sims, 40 yards down the field, dropped the ball.
I remember that pass. That was frustrating.
There was a lot. And I think that was a New England Patriots game, and you don't want to drop any balls in those games. But there were some passes that hit receivers in the hands, or at least in a receiver radius, catching radius, that were just on the receiver's fault. So
yeah, definitely agreed. What about Rishard Matthews? We heard obviously a couple times way earlier in the offseason, maybe February, we heard he wasn't happy, he wanted to be cut, he wanted to be traded. Then we didn't hear anything for a while. Then we heard again a little bit before OTAs, he wasn't happy, he wanted to be cut, he wanted to be traded. And then he you know, Parker has the injury. He comes on to OTAs, and they give him a lot of opportunity. And I know it's just OTAs, but he takes advantage of it. What are your thoughts on him? And do you see him as a player that has a lot of ability, overrated, underrated?
I was always a big fan of him. I really liked Matthews. I thought he was a guy who was a very physical guy. He's hard to bring down. He's quicker than you think. He's a little bit faster than you think. He really does catch tough passes. He played that big slot position really well. You know, he was going to get hit by linebackers a lot in that Sherman offense. I don't know why he went away in that laser in the laser offense. I guess Landry sort of took his role, but I liked him in that Sherman offense. I thought that was the one really good thing that Sherman did was find ways to get Rashard Matthews the ball. I think it was a little bit, maybe a little bit underused, but at least he was used somewhat. I think that he could really fill in that Charles Clay role if he gets a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. I think he has that same quickness, mismatch ability on a linebacker. If you put a linebacker on him, they can't keep up. If you put a small corner on him, they can't bring him down on just a tackle if he's squared up with him. If Matthews is squared up with the small corner. So I really think he needs to change his game a little bit, get a little bit bigger, but I like the guy. I think he's really good. I'm not an insider. I don't know if he's a locker room headache or if he's just doesn't get the offense or he doesn't what or he's not a blocker. I'm really not sure, but I do like him. You know, there's some things I'd like to see with him. I like to see him high point the ball better. I like to see him jump for the ball. But besides that, great hands, big. Big receiver that's hard to bring down. I see him as a Anquan Boldin body type, and that's somebody that you want on your team, personally.
Yeah, I agree, and I think some of the issues with him not getting that chance is, well, he comes on the team as an undrafted free agent, if I'm not mistaken, correct? He was undrafted.
No, he was a late round draft.
I was okay, so he's a late round, low round pick. He makes, and a lot of times those guys, especially at receiver, they don't, you know, we see him 50-50 when they're picked low like that.
Yeah.
And so he comes on, he's a rookie, obviously low round, not gonna be in the mix a lot too much. I believe it was Tannehill's rookie year as well that he came on, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was his rookie year.
Okay, and then all of a sudden, instead of let's see what Matthews can do, we go out and let's change it all again. We're gonna go get Mike Wallace. We're gonna go get Brandon Gibson. We're gonna re-sign Brian Hartline. So now you've spent all this money at receiver. You're not gonna take Matthews and make him a first or second guy. You've spent all this money at receiver with those three guys. So you got that for a couple years, and then okay, those guys are gone. Wallace is gone. Hartline's gone. Gibson's gone. And Matthews is like, yes, this is my chance. Okay, now we draft Parker. We sign Jennings. We've got Landry, who's playing a prominent role.
Stills.
We trade for Stills, and this guy's like, what do I got to do here, man?
Yeah.
You've seen me make plays. When I get the opportunity, play me more. So I understand his frustration.
Exactly.
I would be just as frustrated because he's missing his prime. He's leading up to his first, what would be quote-unquote, big contract, and the guy hasn't gotten a chance to prove what he can do. So I understand why he's upset. I get it.
Uh-huh. And there's some people who do not think he has the talent or whatever the case may be. But I think
Oscar Hazel being one of those guys, by the way,
exactly,
he's not
exactly
sold on him at all.
I like Oscar Hazel a lot, but there's some players that we just do not agree on. And we've had conversations on Twitter about certain guys that I guess we just see maybe they don't get the same feed over in UK, but we just don't see eye on certain players. But like I said, I like the guy a lot. I like Hazel a lot. But and Matthews is quick right off. Like he's quick enough off the line, and you're not gonna press him because he's 215, 216 pounds. There's a lot to like. I really do think he's a good big slot type of player, and I think he has enough to play that two role.
Okay, you recently did a piece that I read, it was probably about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago on FinManiacs.com about Lamar Miller, and you broke down a lot of different things about him. Could you maybe elaborate on that a little bit, or a little bit on Lamar Miller in general?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, it was supposed to be a love letter. So some of it, there was a problem with the email or whatever the case may be. So my editor didn't get the whole story, but it was a love letter. And basically, it was started off as a he's not getting any love. I think I personally think ever since he's been in Miami, he hasn't gotten any love. He starts his rookie season off, and you know, you don't know what you get with a fourth round rookie, and you know, Reggie Bush leaves and he gets his chance and he does well, but that line was atrocious with Martin and Incognito, which again, that set us back a while.
That did set us back. I guess I beat up on our line a lot and them not being able to build it, but I always seem to forget that did set us way back.
Yeah.
Because we even lost John Jerry in the end on that team.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he had to go because of his name was part of it or whatever, or he was in whatever the case may be. You know, I definitely think that Sherman offense was, as much as Richard Matthews, it helped Richard Matthews, that Sherman offense was not helping Miller. They ran out of the I formation and the dotted I, single I, way too much, and they didn't really run it with Tannehill, which kind of that and when they were running out of that I, the play action was just not there because no one feared that deep threat from Tannehill because it just wasn't working. So safeties were just teeing off on him, just teeing off. Okay, so then we get and plus there's no run threat that year that much. So again, safeties didn't have to, or not even just safety, just like the end man didn't have to account for Ryan Tannehill. So they just, you know, full force, no thinking involved, teed off on Miller. So then we get into this laser offense, and he is a perfect fit for that laser offense. He's quick. He has that zone blocking or that zone run scheme down packed. He has that one cut burst. He can burst it outside. He can bang it in the middle, and then he can bend it back. You know he has all those three running styles that you need in that zone scheme. He can catch enough. He's not Calvin Johnson, but he can certainly catch the ball. And I just think that he really does fit this offense really well. And part of my article was about how in the draft process, everybody was not everybody, but half the Finns fans were clamoring for Gurley. And clamoring for Gurley. And I'm just saying, like, wait, we have a running back. You know, we have a guy who has 1,000, I believe it was like 13,000 total yards and 9 touchdowns. We have this guy who improved every year. We have this guy who averaged above 4 yards a carry. And what more do you want from this guy? He has gotten zero love. So that was basically the article.
Okay, I got to be honest. I'm going to tell you what I want. I want him to be able to run between the tackles and get short yardage on third down and get in the end zone.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I honestly, when you say what more do I want, I know it's hard to be all things to all people, but I want him to make chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, out of chicken bleep. I want him to get to pound out the yards we need, but I'm not even that concerned about it anymore because I think between I'll call the three-headed monster. Okay, it's a little early to say three-headed monster, but between Damian Williams, Jay Ajayi, and Lamar Miller, I think we have enough to make that happen now. So I don't think it's as important as it was before when we were pretty much strictly relying on him. I mean, it was interesting when Knowshon Moreno came on the team. The first second you saw that guy run, you were like, "Whoa, that guy's good," but he just can't stay healthy. Obviously, he's moving on.
Right.
And Daniel Thomas, that was just...
Oh, my God.
That was just one of those bad Ireland picks that we couldn't seem to let go of. You know, it was just time to be done with that, for sure.
That was, I have a really funny story about that Daniel Thomas pick. I was watching the draft, and I was that was the year that Mallett came out too, Ryan Mallett.
Yeah.
And you know, the jury's still out on him, but I was a big fan of Mallett. So the second round comes around, and I'm like, oh my god, Mallett is here. So I'm in Chili's, and I'm like, Mallett, all right, we're gonna get him. I'm with my boys, and we're like, Mallett, we're gonna get him. And then they're like, Daniel Thomas, and I like, what the hell? I like bump into this random person's dish, and it falls all over. I'm so mad. I'm like, I'm so sorry, but Daniel Thomas, what the hell?
That's hilarious. Where were you at? Like, you were at a restaurant?
Chili's. Oh, I was nice. In the Chili's. Yeah.
That's hilarious. What did the person do that you knocked their food over?
He was just like looking at me like, man, what the? I'm like, I'll take care of it, but Daniel Thomas.
that's pretty funny. Yeah. Yeah, I was frustrated with how long they tried to keep on that Daniel Thomas train. That experiment ended a lot later than it should have, for sure. But yeah. How are you feeling about the running back core, the group of guys we have now? And even thrown into the mix, Gillislee and LaMichael James, I have that right. Even throwing those guys out, who are you with me on the three guys of Williams, Ajayi, and
right now,
Miller?
Those are my three guys that are the 1, 2, and three. I don't know if the order is Ajayi, then Williams. You know, I'd be surprised if Miller got out of his starting role.
Oh, but I would too. I think for sure Miller's going into the season as a starter. I have no doubts on that.
Yeah, and I know you're a big Ajayi fan.
I'm excited about him. Yes, I am.
I'm excited about him, yes.
it's nice to hear that you listen. I guess you would only know that if you listen.
Yeah, I am a listener. Like I said, I don't know what podcast I heard. I listen to podcasts all the time, but you know, I do listen to you, and you're very good at the podcast. I'm enjoying the podcast.
Oh, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
No problem. But Ajayi, yeah, he's good. I did some study. I didn't write anything on him, but I did some breakdown on him, and he's good. I mean, I think a lot of fans are going to be a little disappointed in how much he bounces out, and I think that's a concern now that it's showing up in OTAs and minicamp. But then again, he had a atrocious line. I mean, atrocious. And
in Boise State, are you saying in Boise State he did?
Boise State. I mean, he was the guy. So, you know, you're going to get men, like, you know, 8 men, 9 men in the box. And the line is not, you know, it's not Alabama and it's not Wisconsin. And I'm not saying he can't hit the hole hard and he can't knock some heads back. But he's not that bruiser that, I mean, he can do it. He can do that job. But I saw a lot of bouncing out that I was like, ugh, you know. And I just think that, you know, we definitely hit the home run with him in the fifth round. There's no debating that. It's just like I would like to have seen a lot more tough yards from Ajayi. And I saw a lot of there's a hole to hit for 3 yards or maybe a tough two, and then I'm gonna try to bounce it out and get a negative yard, you know. So just something to watch out for.
Okay, yeah, I had heard at least one mention of that from someone about he dances and he doesn't hit the hole fast, and that does concern me, because if we're bringing him on to be that short yardage guy. Mm-hmm. Or that goal line guy, that's the last thing he can be doing. So that makes me nervous, man, because I was really excited about this guy, especially because the hands he has. And I'd like to see Miller and Ajayi in the backfield together many times.
Go,
you know, go one tight end, go two wide receivers and two backs sometimes as much as you can, just because I think that would be an exciting dynamic and some different things you can do, considering they both have catching ability to run out in the open field as well, and on top of the running ability. That would make defenses, okay, are they running this up the middle? Or are they bouncing out the side? What are they doing here with both those guys in the backfield? I think there's so many different things that Laser could probably come up with those guys both in the backfield that it would be hard for defenses. So hopefully they use that formation as often as it makes sense for them.
Yeah, and I hate to say that Philadelphia does it, so we're going to do it. But this is a Philadelphia-based offense, and you saw some of Sproles and some of McCoy in the same on the field at the same time, and it worked. sometimes because you have to think, oh, why is he out? You know, why is he out in the flats, or why is he wherever? You know, why do we have two out here? What's going to happen? Like you said, like what are we doing? Are they bouncing it out? Are they bouncing it in? But yeah, I like Ajayi. I really do. I think he's going to be a good player. But it's funny that you said that some people are saying he's dancing. I know Omar Kelly said that.
That might have been actually where I heard it on a tweet, yeah. Or maybe he said it on the radio. Yeah, I know it might have been him that said it.
Yeah, so he said he's dancing. And I didn't really see the dancing as much. Like, I saw a lot of dancing from Daniel Thomas and a lot of dancing from Ronnie Brown when he was running the Wildcat,
Oh, he run it well. We'll let him dance. He danced into the end zone when he was doing the Wildcat.
I just saw a lot of bouncing outside, and maybe it's just the, I'm not going to get killed for my college contract or for a college that I'd like to see him hit that hard three or that hard two. And I do think he does have that burst of speed, or I saw this burst of speed to hit those hard two and hard 3 yards. And that's really what I loved about Miller this past year, is that he really just – He saw the hole and he hit it really fast, and like you said, yeah, he didn't get those 2 yards sometimes, but he was very consistent about getting 6 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards, 6 yards, 5 yards. It was a lot more times this year than 2013 where he got positive yards, and I think it's some of Ryan Tannehill running and some of him, maturing as a zone read runner, but I think I really don't have a concern. There's not really too much concern on offense for me. I'm not that concerned about any position team in offense. That maybe the interior line, and let's see where Albert is, but I'm not really that concerned about too much on offense.
The Albert thing concerns me just because the difference between the Dolphins.
Yeah.
At before and after Albert last year was night and day. The difference in that O-line, I should say. And what we had to do in the juggling we had to do is unfortunately you had to take your right tackle and put him at left tackle, and you had to take a guard and make him the right tackle, and which was degrading every single position pretty much on the line. You even now had your center playing guard because the guy who got in to play center because Pouncey was hurt. So You've downgraded center. Pouncey's a decent guard, but he's a much better center. You literally were downgrading the entire line because of those two situations. Now I'm hearing chatter that they're putting Jason Fox a lot at left tackle. Whether that's just as a space filler while Brandon Albert can't play, so that the other four guys can get used to the position they will play,
right.
Or if let's say Albert doesn't get into the first or second game, if they actually go that route, I don't know. I always looked at Jason Fox as a backup guy, as a role player. I really never looked at him as a starting left tackle in the NFL, protecting Tannehill's blind side. I really, really, really hope that Albert can come back first game. And I'm not concerned about him missing the training camp simply for the fact that he's a veteran guy. He knows the ropes of the NFL. It's not like Parker, who's missing valuable time.
Right. I agree with you.
He's a veteran. He knows the ropes. Yeah, I'll have to get back into game shape a little bit, but he'll still be solid. And he was... He was great last year when he was on the field. Albert was really good.
He was one of the best players. Like, he was one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL last year. He was one of our top players by far. I mean,
it was a good signing. It was a good signing by Hickey.
It was really good signing. I mean, yeah, I couldn't be more happy with that signing. Pre-injury, obviously, but you can't foresee injuries, so
yeah, that's true. All right, so we beat up talking about Ajayi lots. Let's talk about some of the other rookies, man. Obviously,
all right.
We talked about Parker some, but let's get in some of these other rookies. Just go ahead, fire some out there. Tell me what you think.
All right, well, I'm gonna start from sort of like a countdown, bottom to top. So I'll start with the couple of the linebackers I watch, the undrafted free agents. I really like Mike Hall. He's a little bit undersized, but size isn't really that big of a factor with him, or at least in the college game, because he wins with instincts. And from studying, he does a lot of things well, and he's good at the stack and shed, of blockers, and he gets to the spot before blocker for before blockers and before the runners. I really like.
Hey,
this
Matt,
throw.
if you could explain to me and us a little bit, because I know little about football technique. You said stack and shed. Is that a specific term, and what does that mean?
Yeah, that's when like the blocker comes at you at like a linebacker, and he sort of like drops his hips, he bends his knees and hips. He sticks his arms on like in the armpits of the blocker, and he lifts him up and sort of gets past him that way. That's whenever you hear that stack and shed, that's basically what that means.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to ask that question.
No, that's fine.
Continue on with what you were saying about Hull.
Yeah, no, he's just a good football player. I know you hear that term flinged around and oh, he's a football player, but he's a football player. He's gonna do his job, and he's not gonna. And from what I saw, it wasn't a lot of like it wasn't like these 8 or 10 films that you see on the top prospect guys. But from what I saw, you could pretty much see a guy's 3 films and say, oh, this is what he does well. This is what he doesn't do well. What I saw from Mike Hull, he is what he is. He's a little bit undersized, but he plays with great technique, very smart instincts, and. You know, guess he's athletic enough that he gets to where, you know, he's not a concern. He's not a liability on the field athletically.
Where can you see him? I mean, obviously, if you're that big on him, I imagine with the thinness or the lack of depth at linebacker, you see him at least making this 53?
You know, I'm... Yeah, I definitely think he can make the 53. I don't know if he can do special teams. I'm not.
That hurts him. He has to play some good linebacker then, to be a bottom 53 guy.
That's my only concern with him. You know, I'm not sure. I don't know if he is or isn't. But I haven't seen any special teams from him, and I haven't heard anything on OTAs about him. But yeah, like you said, that does hurt him. So that could be a concern. The special teams.
Okay. All right, so what about some of the other guys?
Jeff Luck, he's a thumper. He's a rundown thumper. He's a pretty good blitzer. I'd like to see him use his hands more. Linebackers or any football player, they need to use their hands to shed blockers or to find blockers. You know, his hands were a lot by his side, and he really isn't a great athlete. At least that guy's a blazer, but he's a thumper and he hits you and you can see that he likes to hit people, and that's something that we definitely need. We definitely need a tough, you know, no nonsense guy. Do I think he's gonna make the team? Probably not, but I've heard he's going to be moved to. They're flirting with fullback, and
but we don't actually even have a fullback.
Yeah,
so they're talking about maybe making him one of those guys that just he's a lead blocker on some short, rushing situations.
Uh huh.
Okay, that's interesting. Guy, I'd like to see us actually play a little fullback. I think we did it when we didn't have a fullback. What, we put Solii in there once or twice? Am I remembering that correctly?
We put some big guys back there, but yeah, I'm not too. I don't know.
Charles Clay started with this kind of more of as a fullback or an H-back.
I'm not. I wouldn't bet that he makes the team. I just don't see the thumper being that big. But like, I don't know how much of a special teamer he is either. The other two guys, Vigil and Hewitt. I think it's Vigil.
Yes, Zach Vigil. Yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen too much on them. They just didn't have the film. Several couple of highlight films. You know, again, a lot of plugs for Oscar Hazel, but he really likes Hewitt a lot. But I hate analyzing a player just based on highlight film because
they're highlights.
Exactly. So
yes, I get you.
Exactly. So it's like it's hard to really say, oh, he's really good at this. If you just base it on highlights, well, he's a first-round pick then, you know?
But, understood.
Yeah. I really like the Christian Jones signing.
Oh, yeah, me too, man. That's not been talked about at all either. I think he's got a shot. Teams. If they go six wide receivers, I think Christian Jones has a shot to make it.
Well, just based on special teams, I mean, that's what he was in Alabama, basically. He was basically a returner, and he brought some back, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'd like to see what happens with that, but I've heard of nothing of him in OTAs. Like, his name hasn't even been mentioned. He's kind of disappeared from what I've read. I don't know, maybe, but I haven't read everything. Maybe you've seen more than I've seen as far as they're reporting, but it seems like he disappeared once the vets came in.
Yeah,
you didn't see this guy anymore.
I haven't heard anything. Maybe they're just not doing special teams that much right now, or whatever the case may be. I know they like to schedule certain things on certain days, and maybe they just don't schedule special teams on media days or whatever the case may be. But
no, they don't. They schedule their red zone work on media days because it's media days.
And he's not going to be in a red zone package, I don't think. So, you know, but if he does make the team, that's really going to help Jarvis Landry, I think. I think, you know, Jarvis Landry is a great receiver. He's a great punt returner and a great kickoff returner, especially when you think he really didn't do that in college. But I think it saves Jarvis Landry a lot if we could get an actual special team specialist.
I agree, but man, Jarvis Landry was so good. I hate taking him off. I know there's not a lot of guys that play primary receiver and do the kickoff return duties, but I mean, maybe Edelman does that.
Yeah.
And I think maybe Welker did that. I mean, so obviously New England is Belichick is a coach that's willing to take that chance, apparently, with one of their number one receivers, and go ahead and make them be the kickoff guy. I mean, unless a guy really comes in strong, I really want to see. I really want to see Landry back there, honestly.
Well, you know what? I don't have the I don't have the data with me or anything like that. But maybe they just use Edelman on like important returns and whatever the case may be. But I think that's what they do with Landry. I think they on a important possession or important they need 20 yards from a return, put Landry in there, but maybe not use him on every single return, because that could be dangerous too.
Yeah, I agree, man. Any other rookies you want to talk about?
I'll speed through this. Tony Lippitt, I mean, surprise of the camp, I think.
Yeah, so far. I mean, so far, big time. Especially a guy that barely played cornerback, and now all of a sudden he's making plays.
That was a shock to me that we even drafted him, but like, because he doesn't fit our size speed guy. Like, he's not. If you look at our corners, they're not that.
No, we got rid of two of the best corners in the NFL because they were not what we wanted out of our defense. They weren't zone guys. Sean Smith and Vontae Davis are now out there being top five, top 10 corners in the NFL, which I'm telling you, and I know I didn't do the show before back then, but anybody who knows me personally can vouch, I thought those guys had the chance to be the best tandem of cornerbacks in the NFL, best tandem, and if you look right now on paper, you see that together they would have been the best two cornerbacks together in the NFL, and we got rid of them because they weren't the size that we were looking for, because we wanted to play zone and they were press guys. And now we go and we draft a guy like Lippitt, who's what, 6'2", 6'3", hands, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the film I watched on him, or just like not even like breakdown film, like, you know, I think it was the Stanford-Michigan State game. He's from Michigan State. I watched him and I was like, this guy, he's a big body guy. He's good. He really popped out at me as a receiver. I'm like, he's a good receiver, but I guess it's making a good transition. And then I'll get to Phillips next, and then we can do whatever.
Okay.
Jordan Phillips, man, I love that pick. I thought that pick was just really – bless you.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm still trying to get rid of this cold that I got from vacation. I apologize.
Yeah.
Continue on, man. I didn't mean to interrupt you with my sneezing.
No problem. He's a beast, absolute monster. He's a bit raw. Yeah, I think he was a sophomore, redshirt sophomore. Or I know he was a sophomore, so he, 2 years of college game time, and he's a bit raw, but he, if he puts it all together, watch out. And look, Finn fans, be patient with this guy, because the 0-1 technique, it's a lot to master. There's a lot to learn. But
explain a little bit about that 0-1 technique.
That's your nose tackles. That's your Paul Soliai position. And Earl Mitchell plays the one. He has a little 3 technique. Earl Mitchell can play a little bit of 3 technique, but Earl Mitchell was that one. He's that the middle. They go over the center. They basically are blocker. They eat up blockers. They try to get as many double teams as possible so that linebackers and defensive tackles can get and like the 3, which is Sue's a 3 technique. Sue is a penetrating defensive tackle, pass rushing defensive tackle. Well, Phillips and Mitchell primarily plays the 1. They take up blocks. They try to eat as much blocks as possible. So linebackers can blitz. On running plays, linebackers can have open lanes to get running backs. Basically, they just want to take as much blockers as possible.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to add?
But if Phillips pulls it all together, watch out. That might be the steal of the draft. If he can – and I really think he needs to follow Sue like a little dog or like a little brother and just follow him around and just lap up everything he's given. I know they don't play the same position. I know they don't have the same size or even the same game type, but still – the opportunity that Phillips has with Sue next to him and just, you know, if I was Phillips, I'd say, what do you see on this play? What do I need to do? What would you do on this play? And if he can do that and he can really, really focus in, I think we hit the jackpot.
Yeah, I agree, man. I'm excited about him. I mean, he just looks like a big bruiser. I wish we could have already had him a year and pair him. You know what I mean? And have him in there. That would be just ridiculous, but still a little soon for the guy to really have those kind of high expectations. But in that position, we're rotating guys continuously.
Yeah, like I said, be patient. Like, if he doesn't play a lot of snaps this season, don't be like, oh my God, another, I don't want to say, I know this name is forbidden on your show, but another Deion Jordan,
Deion Jordan.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it is what it is. I don't even miss the guy. I gotta be honest.
I agree with you.
He was a good special teams player though, but beyond that, I don't miss the guy. Yeah. He was a $20 million special teams player. Congratulations for him.
Yeah.
All right, man. Anything else, or you want to tell us a little bit? That's
sorry.
Okay. No problem. You want to tell us a little bit about what you do for your website?
Yeah, basically, I started right after the draft. I have a couple of breakdowns. Jamil Douglas was my first, and with first of anything, it was a little rough, but it was still the analysis was pretty good. I did Jordan Phillips and got a little bit better, but I basically watch film, see just write about what I see and how it can help the Dolphins and what the Dolphins see in this player, and basically on FinsManiacs.com we have a bunch of players that we've analyzed since the draft, and it's a really cool website. Everybody should really check it out. It's been really fun to work on, and you see a bunch of stuff that you just haven't seen watching it regular TV and on a Sunday or Saturday. So you pick up on stuff and you see, oh wow, I see why they did this play, because on the last play they did this. But it's been a really cool experience, and it's really good articles on there. Not only mine, just all the articles have been really good.
All right, man, that's great. Yeah, I do read a lot of articles from Finn Maniacs. It's a fun site. I like reading all the Dolphins sites. I try and soak up as much information as I can as a fan.
Yeah, and so it's a fan site. So, like, we're not taking ourselves too seriously, and it's good stuff. And we're basically doing what you're doing, trying to talk about the Finns and trying to get excited about the season. It's yeah, not hard with the moves.
No, definitely. Yeah. This has been one off season to remember. And we keep on having these great off seasons. I'm ready for them to equate to some great seasons. It's yeah, time. No. We're due. We're overdue. Let's face it. We are overdue.
We are overdue
to have that kind of season for this to all come together the right way. It is we have been trying and trying and trying, and it is hopefully our time. I just feel like it's time. We're due. It's gonna happen this year.
I think this is the most excited I've been, and the most like realistic expectations I've had for the team. And last year I was like, well, you know, let's calm down. We're missing a couple pieces here, and we're missing a couple pieces here. I really don't see too many pieces that we're missing if we stay healthy. But, like, for instance, Sue, I was like, oh, we really need this guy. This guy's going to – before that was – people would laugh at me when I said we need to get Sue, because it was like, that's no way. No way, you know? I was like, we need this guy. He's tough and really toughen up our middle and our defense. And we got him. I was like, oh, my God, you know?
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree that I think we, like you said, I don't think we're missing much. I am worried about interior line. I know that some people say it's not the most important position, but with our sack history with Tannehill and the inability to run the ball on short downs and in the red zone and the end zone goal line, I think it's more important for us maybe because it's been a thorn in our side, really, those things have kept us from winning some games. So I hope that they figure this O-line thing out. But beyond that, I'm feeling good pretty much everywhere else. Even though we don't have the answers for who's going to be the starter, I see enough pools of talent in those areas that it's gonna come. Somebody's going to win that position, not just get it by proxy because everyone else stunk. Like cornerback, for instance. Second cornerback, you know, opposite of Grimes. I feel like there's enough guys there, more than enough guys there. And more are kind of appearing every day, it seems like. And before, I was a little worried about safety, but now I'm looking at safety and I'm thinking, man, this safety crew actually looks better than I thought it did going into the OTAs and into the off-season work. So I think it's going to be a good season, man. I really do. I really see us having a winning season. I really see us making the playoffs this year.
Right. And I guess they were the right moves that we've made, the right moves. A couple of years ago, we made big splash names, and just like with the Willer and the Ellerby and Wallace that year, big splash. Well, you know, besides, you know, we made these moves, and it was like, oh wow, big moves. But they weren't always the right moves. I think we finally have gotten it right with the right moves. So I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely about how a team fits together, the chemistry. That's why, and I didn't want to get a big rant on this episode, but the article that came out, whether it was ESPN who wrote it based off PFF numbers or is PFF saying it, whichever, saying that the Dolphins have the worst roster in the AFC East. Really? Then if you're, I mean, even looking at the individual pieces, I don't see that, especially when you weight the quarterback position in there. I don't know how they weighted this number, how they looked at it. I just think that's bull crap. I don't know how any intelligent person who watches football, looks at football, can sit there and look at the rosters and say the Dolphins have the worst roster in the AFC East or a 20-something roster in the NFL. You're going to tell me that you're thinking that there's 20-something rosters better than the Dolphins roster? I don't understand who's grading this stuff or how they're grading it, but I don't even want to get into it. I'm still fuming from reading that, to tell you the truth.
I mean, big media always hated on the Dolphins. I don't take whatever big media says about the Dolphins or whoever's saying it about the Dolphins. Let the play on Sundays decide. You know, I'm not worried about what they say about the Dolphins. They've always badmouthed us, so hey, until we prove it, they're right.
I guess so, but we're going to prove it this year. All right, everybody. I appreciate everyone joining. This has been Unsquish the Fish, of course. If you want to email the show, you can email us at unsquishthefish@yahoo.com or Gmail. Or follow me on Twitter. I'm active on Twitter now. I wasn't as much before, but I am now at unsquishthefish. Or you can like the Facebook page, Unsquish the Fish. Again, this is Ron. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And fins up, guys. Have a great day.